So if we look at all that food that's on our plate every day, day after day, through our lifetimes, 50,000 pounds of food easily, what we realize is that those are the raw materials that are making the neurotransmitters that let me do this program. They are the combination of antioxidants and saturated fats and carbohydrates and polyphenols and folic acid and that turn into me. And so when I tell people to think about every bite of food that's gone in your mouth in the last 156 days, okay, so that's all of February and all of January and all of December and all of November and all of October, and we're already back into September. If you could picture every single bite of food that's gone into your mouth, every sip of a soda, every can of beer, every stalk of broccoli, every chicken leg, every lettuce salad, every bowl of sugar bombs, every single solitary thing that's gone in your mouth in the last 156 days, essentially it's sitting in your chair. Yeah. Your body turns over way faster than that nonsense we learned about every 7 years. Your body is literally changing out billions and billions, and no, this isn't Carl Sagan doing the class, but billions and billions of cells every single solitary day. Now, people can go on the other side of the continuum, and they no longer see food. They only look at the nutrients, both good and bad, that they contain. My husband and I just came back from our annual pilgrimage to the Keys to do astronomy at the Winter Star Party. Winter Star Party is a wonderful event, about 600 astronomers, about 400 telescopes at a scout camp halfway between Marathon and Key West. Happens every year, Winter Star Party. And we, as usual, go out to dinner, and you go out to dinner early when you eat with astronomers because everybody wants to be on the field when the sun sets at 6:30 and start to observe right away. And one of the guys that was with us, a guy I adore, is carrying way too much weight, and he ordered a French-Canadian dish called poutine, which is a word I hadn't heard before, but it is apparently a favorite of lumberjacks. And it was French fries with beef hunks and gravy all over it. And, you know, I look at this guy and I look at this plate, and it's really a heart attack on a plate. I think if you buy it 12 times at the restaurant, they give you a free coupon for a crash cart. But it's like some people are just oblivious. Or they go, oh, you know, I'm on vacation. It's something rare. It's my birthday. It's Groundhog Day. It's holiday. You know, I can get away with this now. So on one side of the gamut, we've got individuals who only see nutrients and begin to get so fussy about them that they are really food neurotics. And on the other end of the continuum, we look at individuals that pay no attention to these invisible qualities of our food that hold the secret to eating well. But with all the science and all the pseudoscience and all the nonsense that's out there, a lot of people still don't know what they should eat. And so a few years ago when Michael Pollan, you know, really the flag bearer of healthy eating, came out with his book, Food Rules, I was so happy to see that he cut to the chase. He cut to the chase in terms of saying, what do you eat? You eat plants. How much should you eat? Not too much. And so Michael Pollan did us a real favor with Food Rules because he gave us rules, everything from stop eating before you're full to love your spices, from eat like an omnivore to eat your colors, drink the spinach water, avoid foods that contain high fructose corn syrup. You know, they were pretty simple rules. Well, and one of the other top authors, in my opinion, that's out there really trying to make a change in the American diet is Mark Bittman. Mark Bittman has written a lot about diet and the changes. In fact, the changes that he's made personally to his own diet, cutting down on processed foods and becoming a semi-vegetarian. Mark Bittman has inspired an awful lot of people. He's inspired me, just like Michael Pollan has. But what I see that we come down to the nitty-gritty is starting out with eating real food. You know, I've said for years and years, eat what occurs in nature. Chickens occur in nature. Chicken nuggets don't. In fact, when you eat chicken that comes from mechanically processed, you know, where they have used machines to strip the meat off the bone, you get a whole lot of bone fragments in there. It's real easy. You don't even have to put a microscope on it. You can just put a loupe on it and you can see them. So when you're eating chicken nuggets and chicken parts in that way, you're getting pieces of bone, and that becomes problematic because the bone is where the chicken stores the arsenic and stores the fluoride, and you get those in the chicken pieces. So chicken and chicken nuggets aren't the same thing. You know, chicken's questionable in and of itself. I mean, with the study that came out from Consumer Reports a couple of weeks ago, that 97% of the 300-plus chicken breasts they tested had bacteria on them that couldn't be killed by three different antibiotics. You know, that's pretty scary. It tells you that you never want to rinse your chicken in the sink. You always want to take your chicken and put it directly into the pan you're going to cook it in. And make sure you wash your hand good after you throw that package away, because it isn't just salmonella anymore. It's campylobacter. It's E. coli. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are on there. And, you know, we continue to use these 29 million pounds of antibiotics on livestock here in this country, something that they don't do in other places. And yeah, they don't do it in other places. There's been a huge big shift in that. The huge big shift that's happened in Europe. I don't know, there's some things where Europe is just smarter than we are. You know, 6 years ago, the Netherlands used more antibiotics on livestock than any other country in Europe. But today, they've drastically reduced the use of antibiotics in meat because it creates antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So when we look at eating real food, it isn't just a matter that we're going from chickens to chicken nuggets and that chicken nuggets are way worse. But, of course, we're now talking about sending all of the inspections of the health of the chickens directly to privatization, so that the companies, and there are four major companies that put out 50% of all the chickens in the United States, that they become self-regulating. Oh, right, that's a good idea. Let's see how good that worked with the coal ash in North Carolina. They're going to be self-regulating, and they want to speed up the inspection line so that the inspectors inspect 175 chickens a minute. Yeah, you heard me right, 175 chickens a minute. So even when I say eat real food and I say eat chicken and not chicken nuggets, we still got some questions about the chicken itself. And so right away we come with the caveat that says make sure that you're buying no antibiotics used on them chickens. Ultimately, we're going to come to the place where antibiotics are only going to be used on sick animals and they're not going to be used as a growth medium. But it ain't happened yet. When people in the Netherlands can reduce their use of antibiotics by over 50% in just 3 years, we know that this is possible. When I say eat real food and I say have a potato instead of a Pringle, the idea is, you know, if you knew what they did to a potato to turn it into a completely balanced architectural chip that will stack in a can designed for tennis balls, then you would understand the reason that I say that this is no longer food. But even a potato is on the top 10 list of pesticide residues that show up according to the Environmental Working Group's Dirty Dozen list. Actually, the Environmental Working Group doesn't make the Dirty Dozen list. The United States Department of Agriculture makes the Dirty Dozen list. And even though strawberries and peaches are still one and two on the top of the list every year for the most contamination, and that's important to remember during strawberry season, please only buy organics. But potatoes are in that lot as well. But at least a whole potato, a real potato, an organic potato, it's really come under disfavor as people have tried to cut down on their total amount of carbohydrates when they're not eating french fries with gravy on them. Potatoes are rich in vitamin C. They're rich in potassium. They're rich in fiber. So it isn't the potato that's bad. A lot of times it's what we do to it, between the butter and the sour cream and the bacon bits and the frying it and coating it before we fry it. Oh, you just don't want to get me started. Eat what occurs in nature. Eat an orange instead of having a glass of orange juice. You know, there's a trick question that a buddy of mine does every time he does a conference for doctors. And he says, how many of you recommend that your clients start their day with a can of cola? And of course, nobody in the room raises their hand because a can of cola has 9 teaspoons of sugar in it. How many of you recommend that people start their day with a glass of orange juice and half the hands in the room go up? 12-ounce glass of orange juice has 9 teaspoons of sugar in it, exactly the same as there is in the soda. Now, granted, there's some nutrients in the juice, and we are absent the phosphoric acid and the caramel color and some of the other nasty ingredients that are in cola, but there's still 36 grams of sugar. There's 9 teaspoons of sugar in an equivalent amount of cola and orange juice. So when I say eat the food, it's eat the orange, don't drink the juice. Eat the potato, don't eat the chips. Eat the chicken, don't eat the nuggets. Get to the place that we are eating real food. And one of the ways that you do that is to cook. Cooking is healthier than not cooking. Home-cooked meals always contain fewer calories than those that are eaten out. Sure, there are exceptions. But nearly everything that you cook at home is superior in quality and nutrition. And when people tell me, oh, I don't have time to cook, then, you know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. It's a whole lot cheaper than not cooking. You know, even last night when I had those duck breasts that I enjoy so much, 2 frozen duck breasts in a box for $12.99, that's $6.50 an entree. I can't get an entree at a restaurant for that kind of money. And so when I put the organic sweet potato, we split one small one, and then I fixed that beautiful asparagus, which, by the way, is very rarely sprayed with pesticides. I was able to put a meal together that in a restaurant I'd spend $26 to $34 for easily before I ordered a cup of tea or a salad to start with. And, you know, I did it last night for about $8 a plate. Cooking really gives you control. You know, as long as you let the giant food corporations and the restaurant chains prepare your food for you, you're losing control of the knowledge of what you're putting in your body. You cook more and you're back in the driver's seat. So thanks to Mark Bittman for that insight. So if it's healthier than not cooking, and it's cheaper than not cooking, and it gives you control, then why wouldn't we do it? Because we don't plan for it well. You know, generally on Sunday afternoon, I'm laying in a stash. I cook 2 proteins, maybe a chicken and a salmon, cook a couple starches. I cooked 2 sweet potatoes last night, even though I know I'm only going to eat one. So it's already in the fridge. I cooked more asparagus than I need. Often make a pot of soup on Sunday, a novelty salad. Maybe it's coleslaw. Maybe it's carrot salad. Maybe it's cuke and onions and tomatoes and parsley. But the idea is that you've got some stash to eat off of for the next 4 days. You're not starting from scratch every day. You know, the other rule that I have is always buy the best food that exists in the store. You know, when you buy the best food, when you buy the highest quality, when you buy the freshest, all of those things make a huge difference. Because every single food can have a high-low index. You know, what's the best tomato? Well, it's probably a cherry tomato or a grape tomato. Because they've got more lycopene in them than if you buy a great big giant tomato. Certainly, I'm buying organic. Why do I want to buy organic? Because I want to reduce the total toxic load. You know, I know there's a lot of holistic moms that listen out there. And they're always interested in development of the fetus. And when we look at the new study that was released by The Lancet 2 days ago, neurodevelopmental disabilities, including autism, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, dyslexia, and other cognitive impairments that affect millions of children worldwide, seem to be increasing in frequency. Industrial chemicals that injure the developing brain are among the known causes for this rise in prevalence. There was a systematic review that was done in 2006 that identified 5 industrial chemicals as developmental neurotoxicants: lead, methylmercury, polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, arsenic, and toluene that we find in nail polish. Since then, epidemiological studies, this is just in the last 7 years, have documented 6 additional developmental neurotoxicants, one of which is fluoride. Well, when you listen to people talk about fluoride, you think, oh, well, it stops tooth decay. That's what it does. You put fluoride in the water. You put a medicine in the water. Hello? You're not putting something in to treat the water. You're putting a medicine in. And so you put this medicine in the water because it's going to reduce cavities. But in fact, the countries that fluoridate their water do not have less tooth decay than non-fluoridated countries. It's claimed that that's the reason the United States has had a large decline in tooth decay over the last 60 years. But that's not true. The large decline in tooth decay has happened in all of the countries that don't add fluoride to their water. And now that 40% of all teens have fluoride marks in their teeth, they don't have too little fluoride, they have too much fluoride. And yet we turn around and we use fluoride toothpaste and we use fluoride mouthwashes. And those things are fine because fluoride works really good on the surfaces of the teeth. But when we drink water with fluoride, or heaven forbid, take a pill that contains fluoride. Yeah, you can get a prescription for a pill you can chew up to take fluoride. Well, turns out that Harvard released a study this week that links fluoridated water to ADHD and mental disorders, autism in children. There's no mom on the planet that wants to have a child who's going to have ADHD. You know, we're talking about 5 or 6% of the total population, even though we're giving drugs in some schools to as many as 30% of boys that are under 12 years old, because ADHD occurs at a tenfold rate in boys than it does to girls. But the idea that mom is drinking fluoridated water, and we're happy to say in Sarasota County we don't add fluoride to the water, unlike Pinellas County that's poisoning everybody. Fluoride obstructs proper brain development. It can lead to autism spectrum disorders, to dyslexia, to ADHD. It may be a silent epidemic that we haven't recognized. In fact, released just 5 days ago was a study that showed that women who take acetaminophen during their pregnancy have a higher rate of children with hyperkinetic disorder, a severe form of ADHD. That's one compound. One compound, acetaminophen, one compound, fluoride, and yet it increased the risk. And then they turn around and tell us we need to have GMO foods. We get people like Monsanto who give us this nonsense that they call science. You know, the one that really blew my mind was Monsanto's use of deceptive use of the expression sound science. You know, sound science has no scientific definition. It doesn't mean peer-reviewed. It's not well-documented research. It's a term. It's an ideological term that's used to support a particular point of view, a policy statement, a technology. Sound science is little more than the opinions of so-called experts representing corporate interest. Simply put, sound science always supports the position of industry over people. That's probably what's going on right now in the Florida legislature when they're talking about doing creating bills that would allow fracking to take place in the state of Florida, right down here in the southwest corner and up in the panhandle, the only two places in Florida you could do fracking, and not reveal the chemicals that they want to squirt into the soil. So how do we go from eat real food and cook at home to fluoride and acetaminophen can hurt your unborn child, to Monsanto? Well, to hear the pesticide and junk food marketers of the world tell it GMO, you know, if you're against GMO, you're just naive, you're anti-science, you're hysterical. And yet, five studies have been released just in the month of February that show that Monsanto might not be quite on the up and up with the other information that they've given us. Remember, the whole thing about GMO foods is it was going to feed the world. Well, crop yields are not any bigger. They said that it would reduce the amount of pesticides and herbicides that were used. But the United States Department of Agriculture released a report last month, and they're USDA is gauging its track record. And the thing is, the United States Department of Agriculture never met a GMO crop it didn't like. But it turns out that genetic engineering did not increase yields. It did not cause a reduction in the use of pesticides and herbicides. It increased the use of pesticides and herbicides. And pesticides are more dangerous than we even thought. There was a study published in Biomed Research International this month that said that we don't have to worry about the toxic chemicals in pesticides as much. It's the inert ingredients that interact with the active toxic ingredients that cause the problems. When you look at commercial products, and one of them was Monsanto's Roundup, nine of them were hundreds of times more toxic than their active ingredient alone. Which one won the most toxic award? Well, Roundup did. It was by far the most toxic of the herbicides and insecticides tested. And guess what? A Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health last month said that when you mix glyphosate, the key ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup, with hard water, water that contains a lot of calcium, magnesium, strontium, iron, the very thing that we have here in Western Florida, it becomes extremely toxic to the kidneys. There have been thousands of deaths of chronic kidney disease among people that are farming in Sri Lanka and Nicaragua and El Salvador, where these very hard waters are being mixed with Roundup. Monsanto is trying to saturate the planet with Roundup. And plus, it persists in soil and water. I can remember that Monsanto always insisted that not only was the herbicide benign, but its toxicity didn't persist. They said after 3 days, it just kind of evaporates. Really miraculous. But it turns out that there are other compounds that are in there. And these other compounds that are there create more toxicity. So they went to Mississippi, and this study was done in Mississippi on measuring the air and the rain, and they compared 1995 and 2007, so 12 years apart. And you go, well, what does the air and rain have to do with Roundup? That's put on the ground. Well, guess what? When the sun comes out and the water evaporates, that becomes the clouds, and then that water comes back down as rain. And Roundup was found in 75% of all the air and rain samples that were tested from Mississippi in 2007, as compared to 1995. That means you're breathing in Roundup with every breath you take. And Mississippi is not the only place that Roundup is being used. So you got to get smart. You got to get smart about eating organic. You got to get smart. And you say, Eve, I can't afford organic. And I say, you can't afford not to. What you want to look at is, no, you may not buy $6 a pound organic asparagus, but you may buy $1 a pound organic cabbage. Not all produce is pricey on a per pound basis. Again, go to the Environmental Work Group website, ewg.org. Environmental Working Group lists the Dirty Dozen. Actually, it's the Dirty 14 now. And the Clean 15. The 15 fruits and vegetables that almost never have a pesticide residue on it, like avocados and mangoes and onions. And they list that 14, lovingly called the Dirty Dozen with a stretch, fruits and vegetables that always have high residues of pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, like strawberries and nectarines and peaches and potatoes and apples and celery and spinach. And unfortunately, blueberries made the list this year. Reduce your TTL, reduce your total toxic load. And start with things like fluoride. Fluoride shouldn't be swallowed. You know, why do I drink filtered water? Why do I drink spring water? Because I'm trying to get the most crud out of there that I can. You can't get fluoride out with a solid carbon filter. You can get fluoride out with reverse osmosis. And, you know, I don't happen to be a big fan of reverse osmosis simply because of the fact that you waste a gallon of water for every gallon that you get. But if I lived in Pinellas County, where they've not only added fluoride to the water, they've added a very toxic form of highly reactive, you know, fluoride is a highly reactive chemical. And let me stop there. These are halogens. You know, when you look at chemistry, halogens are a collection of chemicals, and they include fluorine and chlorine and bromine and iodine, as you know, is iodine, and in their salt form, fluorides and chlorides and bromides and iodides. And of those halogens, fluorine is a slight deviant. It has the highest bond energy and compounds with other atoms. In other words, it's highly reactive. It can be lethal to organisms in sufficient quantities. This nuclear charge, well, I'm only going to do a little bit of chemistry here, but fluorine is one of the most reactive elements in existence. It attacks even inert materials like glass. It is so corrosive in its nature. It's a highly toxic in its gas form. The reactivity is such that if it's stored in laboratory glassware, it can react with glass in the presence of small amounts of water and create a compound called silicon tetrafluoride. And so These substances, such as Teflon, which is an organofluorine compound, dry glass, metals such as copper or steel, they form this protective layer of fluoride on their surface because it interacts with things like copper and steel and glass and Teflon. You know, Teflon is bonded to the carbon of the pan with fluorine. So why shouldn't we be using Teflon pans? I mean, forget all of the other reasons. I could do a whole show on the reasons you shouldn't use a Teflon pan. But the fact that they're fluorine bonded is part of it. You know, there are whole categories of drugs that use fluorine, Cipro being an example of that, Avalox, another, simply because they're highly reactive. That's the reason that they can alter your DNA. And so what do we want to do? Well, moms, don't let your kids get fluoride treatments. Don't get fluoride treatments yourself. You know, when they take that tray and they put that gel in there and they hold it in place for 4 minutes, yeah, it's affecting the outside of the teeth. But you want to get a kid to not swallow that? Good luck. We know that fluoride is an endocrine disruptor. We know that it affects the thyroid. In fact, fluoride used to be used in Europe as a way to shut down a hyperactive thyroid. 95% of all the toothpaste has fluoride in it. And a significant number of children swallow more fluoride from toothpaste alone than is recommended as a total daily ingestion amount. There's enough fluoride in a tube of toothpaste to kill a child, a small child. But you have to remember that even if you're not drinking fluoridated water, you may be drinking a jar of tea that is made with fluoridated water, or a beer, or a sports drink, or a soda, or all sorts of processed foods like infant foods that now have elevated fluoride levels. You might be exposed to it on foods. Actually, the fluoride-containing antifungal and pesticide that's used is fundamentally used on grape products. So raisins, dried fruit, and the wine made from those grapes, those things can have very high fluoride levels. You know, when you drink tea out of a glass jar, do you think that they're really using the best tea when they flavor it raspberry or pomegranate or whatever? You really think that they're using the highest quality tea to make that stuff? I don't think so. When we begin to realize that every plate of food we eat either makes us more alive or more dead. Yeah, that sounds kind of coarse, but it's really true. It either makes you more alive or it makes you more dead. When you sit down to eat that plate of food, what are you doing to your body? It's not just, are you filling the gaping hole? It's not just, am I going to have my belly full so I'm going to be satisfied? The organic papaya with the organic strawberries with the organic yogurt, you guys know what I eat. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, fruit and Greek yogurt. I got to boogie out the door at 8:15 to be here for this show. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, I'm having eggs with vegetables. You know that. You listen to the show, you know what I eat. Why am I choosing organic papaya? Pineapple almost never has pesticides on it. So I don't have to worry about whether I get an organic pineapple. I'll buy one if it's available because I want to support organic agriculture. That's one of the reasons that, you know, I don't ask for activism on this show. But today I'll make an exception. Today I'll make an exception because we've only got one more day. If we want to notify our legislature in Washington that we want GMO labeling, if we want to notify our legislators that we want GMO-free zones, you know, what happens when you have GMO crops is that you could be next door to somebody who is growing organic and the GMO pollen floats over to their yard and turns around and contaminates their crops. And, you know, Monsanto has sued a lot of those farmers when, in fact, it should have been the other way around. So if you go up on OCA, the Organic Consumers Association, then you will have an opportunity to sign in on a petition to let our federal government know that we want GMO labeling and we want GMO-free zones. Send the message to your friends. Organic Consumers Association, take action, is a way that you can make a statement that you want the choice. We're not saying don't grow GMOs. Maybe they're going to turn out to be fine. But, you know, there's been an awful lot of things that haven't turned out to be fine, and we didn't know it right away. Fluoride's a perfect example of that. And so if you want to have a say in the future of your health, go up on the OCA site today and sign that petition and let our federal government know we want zones where GMO can't be let in that zone. If you've got a teenager and you want to know if they've been overexposed to fluoride, all you got to do is look at their teeth. Dental fluorosis is a defect of the tooth enamel where there's cloudy spots and streaks, brown stains, and tooth erosion that can happen. You know, back in the 1950s, when they first started fluoridating water a lot in this country, the health officials said it wouldn't affect even 10% of children. But 40% of American teenagers have fluorosis. In some areas where the fluoridation occurs, the rate is even higher, 70 to 80%. It shows us that children are receiving fluoride from many sources besides tap water. So you're going to have your work cut out for you to find a toothpaste that doesn't have fluoride that your kids can't swallow. You know, the holistic moms I talked to earlier, I wasn't just warning you about fluoride and warning you about acetaminophen, but warning you because there are now 36 studies that found a correlation between fluoride and lower IQ. So this isn't all just about your teeth. Babies who are giving fluoridated water in their formula have higher rates of dental fluorosis. But what's more important is that they've had a reduction in IQ. And I'm talking about 8 points. I'm talking about a difference in earning power through the lifetime of that child that is in the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. Since fluoride is the only medicine that is added to public water, it really, really, really matters that we keep fluoride out of the addition to Sarasota water. But it really, really matters that we try to keep fluoride out of the mouths of our developing children. So now if we come back and looking at these foundational rules that Mark Bittman suggests of cooking, of buying the best food that we can, of doing the things that we know that can help to ensure our health, eating all of the colors of the rainbow, making sure we always get something from the cabbage family in the diet every day, cabbage, broccoli, kale, arugula, Brussels sprouts, bok choy, cauliflower. Because along with onions, those are the high sulfur foods. And they help to carry some of these toxic compounds out of the body. You know, stop buying those little baby carrots. You know, those little baby carrots aren't little baby carrots. Those little baby carrots are mature carrots that are whittled down into those little nubbins. They're cheaper when you buy whole carrots. Cut them yourself. What a concept. You know, what can we do as a foundational food rule? Cut down on the total amount of meat that we eat. You know, when Meatless Monday was started, asking people to go one day a week flesh-free, there's 29 different countries around the world that are starting to make a very significant impact as a result of having Meatless Mondays. Not only can eliminating a day of meat and cheese cut your weekly saturated fat by 15%, it saves fossil fuels. You know, if every American avoided meat and cheese for one day a week, just for a year, we'd save the same amount of carbon load as if we took 7.5 million cars off the road. So you want to see that there's a connection between your plate and the world. There's a connection between your plate and pollution. There's a connection between your plate and how your baby develops. Cut down on meat. Meatless Monday. Something to think about. And can you eat your way well? Can you actually reverse some of the things that may be going askew in your body as you age because of the genetic hand you've been dealt or the years that you didn't make good decisions? And the answer is yes. I see it in my clinic every day. I see individuals that they start to eat certain categories of food, more or less of certain things, because, you know, everything in the body is either a condition of excess or a condition of deficiency. And so when I ask people to do things like eating more cruciferous vegetables, those things that contain the sulforaphane that boosts the immune system by removing the excess free radicals that the white blood cells generate as they kill off the invaders. Simple things. Make sure there's one of those foods in your diet every day. I love coleslaw. I love coleslaw. I could eat coleslaw every day. But you'd probably have to threaten me in order to get me to eat cauliflower. You know, there's a gene for people who don't like cauliflower, and I guess I got it. Now, everybody will say, well, just put cheese sauce on it. Well, hey, you can put cheese sauce on roadkill and it'd taste good. But when we look at onions and celery and carrots and lettuce and spinach and broccoli, when we look at all of these vegetables, each one of them has very specific magic. And so by increasing the amount of that food in the diet, not to the exclusion of everything else, because you know I still think that variety is one of the best keys to nutrition. Even though salmon's good, I don't want salmon, 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 salmon. Even though apples are good, I don't want apple, 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 apple. I want a big variety. The bigger the variety you have, the more fingerprints of nutrition that you get during the course of the day. But there are certain families of food, like the cabbage family, like the onion family, that have super powerful benefits. It's the same thing with anything that's blue or black or purple. If it's blue or black or purple, buy it. Those pigments make a very big difference as far as all of the choices that we make. Well, it's kind of a montage of show. It's kind of a montage as we talk about the rules of eating and about avoiding toxicants and trying to raise healthy babies. But we need to pull all of these pieces together. And we need to do it in our choices every time we go to the market. The choices aren't just at home. The choices are when you go to the market. What do you fill your pantry with? Do you fill it with antibiotic-free chicken? Buy the whole chicken. Buy the whole chicken as often as you can. Because if a chicken is diseased on one side, they can cut that part off and throw it away and sell you the other side. Yeah, yeah, it's true. So try to buy the whole chicken whenever you can. Or buy a turkey. Have them saw it in half. Put half of it in the freezer. But buy it raised without antibiotics. Buy those fruits and vegetables that are on that Dirty Dozen list. Buy them organically. You know, on EWG, you can print down the little wallet card that lists those vegetables until you have committed into your mind so that every time you go to the market and you go to grab the celery, you go, ah, no, organic celery. Every time you go to grab the potatoes, you go, ah, no, organic potatoes. And you start to remind yourself until it becomes habituated. And at the point that it becomes habituated, well, then it's habituated. Mardi Gras, tomorrow, a time that a lot of people do excess. They use it as an excuse. And some people don't need much of an excuse, but they definitely use this as an excuse. And actually, we're going to use it as an excuse here at the station by having a Mardi Gras party. So hopefully what you do for Lent, you know, that celebration of removing something out of the diet for 40 days, a personal sacrifice, you know, whether somebody gave up liquor or gave up chocolate. Why don't you think about giving up toxins? That may make a bigger difference than anything.